This episode of Cheerscast is dedicated to the memory of George Wendt.
Sammy, yeah. I just realized I forgot to call Ma and tell her the good news.
Oh.
You know how she loves you, boy. She's going to be tickled pink when she hears you got the bar back. Oh, Ma! Guess who the new owner of Cheers is? No, it's not me. It's Sam. Well, I'm still a mailman, Ma. I know you had high hopes for me, Ma, but I couldn't finish college, and that's all there is to it. She was thrilled. You wanna go where everybody knows your name.
Hello, and welcome back to Cheerscast, the podcast where everybody knows your name. I'm your host, Ryan Daly, and joining me for the first episode of Season 9 is the co-host of The Outcasters on the Right On Podcast Network. Please welcome back to the show, Tim Price. What's up, Tim?
Hi, Ryan. Oh, I'm so glad to be here. Thank you for inviting me back. Gosh, how many episodes have I been on now? I should have looked that up before I came to talk to you, because it's been a lot, and I always love talking about Cheers, and I'm so grateful that you've invited me to come and have the fun with this new season.
Very much appreciated. I haven't looked at that either, but I'm sure we're in the double digits because we're now in season 9, and I know you've appeared on at least once every season and usually multiple episodes per season. So
it's got to be in the double digits. Yeah.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if it's like 15 or so. I do appreciate you coming on for this one because I love talking to you and you're such an enthusiastic Cheers viewer and commenter on the show. However, listeners, as much as I would love to just kick this one right off and be really excited, we do have to kind of start this episode on a bit of a somber note. This is the first episode we're back since the passing away of the actor George Wendt, who played Norm Peterson, one of the main, basically a foundational part of this show of Cheers, as we'll talk about. Yeah, he passed away back in May, but that was after I had ended the previous season. So it's been a while now, but I just wanted to talk a little bit about him and kind of memorialize him in this moment because of what he meant to the show and kind of me too. Not the Me Too moment. I meant me as well, personally. Not the Me Too movement, but yeah.
I think we knew what you meant. Better to cover your bases, yes.
Sure, yeah, yeah. George Wendt was born in Chicago, Illinois. Woo!
Oh, yay!
On October 17th, 1948, he started acting after college when he joined Chicago's Second City in 1975. Tim, I swear I didn't know like that. When I picked you for this episode, I wasn't thinking about the Chicago connection, but we are all of the city.
Yes.
He made a handful of TV and movie appearances prior to Cheers, including guest stints on the sitcoms Soap, Alice, Taxi, and MASH, which some of you may have heard of. In 1982, he finally got a regular role on the show Making the Grade, which was canceled just in time for him to land the part of Norm Peterson on Cheers. Oh, I'm so glad that show failed.
Imagine what would have happened if it hadn't. My goodness.
Who knows?
What would have happened to Cheers
John
without
Ratzenberger
that presence?
Might have been Norm.
That's pretty fascinating, wasn't it? Isn't it? Mm. Anyway,
George is one of only three cast members to appear in all 273 episodes of Cheers, the other two being Rhea Perlman and Ted Danson.
Wow.
Throughout its 11 seasons. As if that wasn't enough, he also played the role of Norm on several other shows, including Frasier, obviously, The Simpsons, Wings, The Tortellis, and St. Elsewhere. He appeared in the music videos for Michael Jackson's song Black or White and the Soul Asylum song Black Gold. He was also in one of my favorite movies, Fletch, and Airplane 2, the sequel, which I have no strong feelings for or against. His greatest on-screen contribution, however, even more so than Norm Peterson, has to be as Chicago sports enthusiast Bob Swirsky on Saturday Night Live's recurring sketch, The Superfans. George Wendt died in his sleep on May 20th, 2025. He is survived by his wife, Bernadette Burkett, who voiced Norm's wife, Vera, on Cheers, as well as their three children and his numerous nieces and nephews from his eight brothers and sisters. One of his nephews, by the way, is Ted Lasso star Jason Sudeikis.
Hmm.
This is weird because, like, we're now like 3 months removed, so I'm sure that my feelings about his passing aren't as as raw or you know, up front as they were at the time. And for somebody that we've been talking about for me for the last 8 years or so, however long it's been, it's kind of weird because I will continue to think of him in the present tense, sort of almost kind of the way I still right. do with Kirstie Alley, because mm-hmm. it's this ever-present thing whenever I'm talking about the show. But I do like, I've always kind of intellectually thought of him as arguably the most important part of the show, the most important character, in that he is very much the audience surrogate. I mean, he is the customer. Mm-hmm. He goes there to watch the day's events play out in Cheers. That's what he is. He is a self-described spectator. That's the kind of way he thinks of himself. So we are right. He's smart enough to get the jokes. He's not dumb, and he'll throw it back, and the audience, I'm sure, can kind of relate to that. And he's never been the flashy character. He's not the leading handsome man like Ted Danson's character. He's not kind of a doofus like Woody or Coach. He's not the breakout character like Frasier or Lilith. He's the rock. He's the foundation. He sits at that stool and never wavers. Kind of the whole bar orbits around him. That's kind of what I've always felt. Taking him out of that show, just it changes so much. But what do you think? What do you think about him as a character, George Wendt as an actor? Any other memories you had?
Well, sure. One of the things that always comes to my mind when we mention MASH in regards to George, and listeners who know that show, if you can't place what he was in, if you remember the Marine who had an 8-ball stuck in his mouth, that was George Wendt. That image alone is just speaks volumes, because he had to act that whole thing with a ball in his mouth. So that is huge challenge. And he was just wonderful in that minute episode. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he could not be understated as his importance to the show. The presence that he brought and just the way that he made Norm someone we cared about is just amazing, in that he's a guy who you should be able to write off as the bar fly, the lackabout. Does he even go to work when he's supposed to? How many times is he in the bar and probably still on the clock, but don't need to know? He should be somebody that is more of a negative character, but he does it so charmingly. And he's the one who at the end has your back as a friend.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's not an accident that Norm becomes Rebecca's first real friend in the bar, because in his way, George played him. And the way Norm is written is to be everybody's buddy. A lesser actor couldn't have really made that work. This contrast of a guy who really is always kind of like, how can I get my next free beer? How can I be wimpy? I'll gladly pay you Tuesday for a beer today. How does he make that work and not be really just a laughingstock or just a comic relief character? He really is a warm presence. And that's what we all got from it. You know, he's that big teddy bear that just everybody gravitates towards, and not just because of his size.
Right.
So, and the one-liners, he was established from the very beginning as being one of the guys who always could bring a one-liner make him land every time. So it's a sadder world without him around. But I'm so grateful that we had him for the years that we did.
Yeah.
And what he brought to Cheers, it's irreplaceable.
This isn't the last time we're going to be talking about him. It's going to be on every episode, and including he's got some amazing parts in this episode too. So we'll get into that. Before diving into this episode, though, I did kind of want to mention some stuff about season 9 going into this in general. I kind of always mention the awards and some other noteworthy behind the scenes stuff. This year for this season 9 won 4 Primetime Emmy Awards, including Best Comedy, Best Actress in a Comedy, Kirstie Alley, Best Supporting Actress in a Comedy for Bebe Neuwirth, and Best Directing. James Burrows won that.
That's just so great. That's a lot of awards for a single show.
Now, here is the interesting thing. I found out something that really surprised me just prepping this episode. I found out that a long-standing belief or bit of knowledge that I've had about the show was factually inaccurate. And and folks, this will be kind of forecasting what's going to happen at the end of the season and going into season 10. But at the end of season, at the end of this season, if you're watching along and you don't know the show, I'm going to spoil something big. At the end of this season, you know, 26 episodes from now, Sam and Rebecca decide to have a child together. They decide to, they want to get pregnant and have a baby together. And then season 10 will begin, kind of a running subplot throughout the first half of that is their attempts to get pregnant, despite the fact that they're not married, they are not in love, they don't really know how they're going to handle raising the child, and everybody thinks it's a bad idea, but they're committed to it. They drop that plot line in the middle of season 10. And I have always been under the impression or having this belief that the reason this plotline was created and then abandoned was because Kirstie Alley got pregnant and then had a miscarriage. So I believe that she was pregnant when they came up with the plot because they needed to explain it, a reason for her to be pregnant. And then when she miscarried, they're like, okay, we need a sensitive way of addressing this. So they're just going to have the two decide not to do with it. That's what I believe for 20, 25 years, however long. I don't even know. I just discovered that that's not actually correct. She got pregnant before the end of last season or during the summer hiatus before season 9. So she was pregnant at the time that they were filming this episode at the beginning of the season. And the plan that the writers came up with was that, like, with her hooking up with Sam at the end of the season, was that it was going to be a mystery that they were going to draw out throughout season 9 of who was the father. Was it Robin or Sam? And that was going to be kind of like the whole impetus of that. And but unfortunately, Kirstie Alley then did have the miscarriage. Like, that part of the what I knew was true. It was just the timing was off by a year. So it's just kind of a quirk that they never got to that part. Like, that was in their plans for the season. And then it just, like, I think she had a miscarriage around like episode 6 of when they were filming it, and they hadn't brought up the pregnancy plot yet. So then they didn't have to address it. But it was just really weird, because when I was looking at it, I was like, hang on, that time doesn't work. She wasn't pregnant for this season. She was pregnant for season 10. And then I had to look into it. I was wow. I did fact check through multiple sources to confirm this, but it was a weird little quirk that, like, yeah. So she was pregnant, and that the plan was going to be to have, like, this mystery of who the father is. She suffered this miscarriage, which by all accounts, she wrote about this in her book, was devastating. And they handled it as best they could by not bringing it up. And she does kind of fade into the background in a lot of the episodes at the beginning of the season while they were kind of navigating that. So then the decision to get pregnant at the end of season 10, that was just something the writers came up with because they needed a story idea. They needed a cliffhanger. They needed something for the characters to do in order to justify them being together. And then they just dismissed it halfway through season 10 because the audience was like, no, we don't like this. we're not getting this. And everybody was like, this is a bad idea. Let's nix this. Yeah.
Right. Well, as I remember from how they handled that season, not to get too far ahead of or far afield, they were doing some things that were interesting. They had some interesting ideas they were trying to pursue, but it just wasn't working. And mostly because the characters of Sam and Rebecca, it didn't work for.
Right.
The actors were doing the best job they could, but it just wasn't in their characters for this situation. And I think the audience picked up on that.
Right.
That it was rubbing us as viewers the wrong way because it just didn't seem to fit. Right. So that makes a lot of sense. But boy, that is really, I don't think it's really spoilery to talk about the real world stuff that happened that didn't affect the show.
Yeah.
I think you're okay.
Yeah. Anyway, folks, thanks for sticking around and helping me process that.
Oh, well, that's what I'm here for.
Yeah, you had to be on the... All right, but now we're going to get into the episode proper. It's Season 9, Episode 1, Love is a Really, Really Perfectly Okay Thing. A reference to Love is a Many Splendid Thing. Anyway, this one is written by Feef Sutton, directed by James Burrows, and the original air date was Thursday, September 20th, 1990. Before turning himself over to the authorities, Robin Colcord goes to Cheers to profess his love for Rebecca, only to find her in a state of undress with Sam. She tells Robin she almost slept with Sam, but nothing happened. And in private, she thanks Sam for going along with the lie. The next day, Carla is surprised that Sam hasn't crowed to the regulars that he finally scored with Rebecca. Rebecca is surprised too, but when she asks him about it, his lack of enthusiasm suggests the sex wasn't all that great. She accuses him of trying to trick her into going to bed with him again, but even after she storms off, Sam still won't brag to the others that they did it. Sam consults his priest about his misgivings over the situation and why he's so unhappy after getting what he wanted the last 3 years. Rebecca comes back to apologize and accept the fact that she is bad at sex. Sam reassures her that the sex was terrific. The reason he didn't want to tell the others is because he truly cares about their friendship and didn't want to betray her. With her blessing, Sam tells the gang that he did, at long last, sleep with Rebecca, and she was fabulous. But nobody believes them. The idea that the sex was that good is too far-fetched. All right, Timmy, what did you think about this one?
Oh, gosh, there's a lot of really funny moments in this episode, but oddly, it doesn't really hit me as one of their best. It's good. Even a lukewarm episode of Cheers is better than most shows on television. We've said that ample times.
Yeah.
But I think that there's just part of the story and the way that this is going to lead to changes in Sam and Rebecca's relationship. You know, putting aside what we've already been talking about, there's other things that are going to come too. It just didn't quite land as solidly as I would have liked. And I really can't put my finger on why. I had a lot of fun with it. I had a lot of laughs with it. But still, it just didn't quite click for me.
I agree with you completely. That was my feeling. And I think I know what it is. At least I think we can work our way through it. It just starts, I think it starts from a place of very low energy. Considering the circumstances, it just kind of feels like the characters are unhappy. And I didn't even want to draw the post-coital analogy. But the climax is over. And now they're just like, okay, now what are we going to do? Okay, like the finale of the previous episode was such a high. How do you come back from that? And I think they set that up as if like that was going to be the ultimate punchline for Rebecca, was that she finally gave in to Sam when it turned out Robin was coming back to her. Like, of all of her stupid luck, he was going to come back and profess his love, and she was going to be with Robin and his billions and everything like that. And it was going to work out that way. But she wasn't patient enough and gave in to Sam. And you just expected Robin saw it. He walked in there and went, oh, my God. And he dumped her. And that was the end of it. And she was back to being miserable, like poor, pathetic Rebecca. But they swerve out of that. And they do that. They make this turn to kind of salvage the relationship. And maybe I assume it was because they wanted to keep Robin as a potential recurring character, even though he doesn't come back as often. But I mean, he is in quite a few episodes at the beginning of the season. So I think they wanted to keep Roger Reeves. They wanted to keep Robin around. Mm-hmm. So they needed her behavior, her to somehow convince him that she didn't sleep with him. And then Sam is just kind of peeved, but quiet and just like bummed, like his feelings are hurt, but it's not big, it's not showy, it's just a very kind of low enthusiasm, like almost like they're just kind of going through the motions at the beginning of the scene. And I think it starts off they dig themselves a hole with that, so that even when the rest of the episode is good, they're starting from below zero and have to work their way up. And it's just, it's more of a climb to get to the good part.
Thank you for putting those into words, because that helps me a ton. That is exactly what it feels like. It's just, it's the energy level is not there. And honestly, it probably would have been funnier for us not to see the immediate aftermath in Sam's office.
Right.
Even if there'd been a day later before Robin confronts Rebecca and starting from scratch, maybe that would have helped.
Yeah.
Instead of in the moment. In the moment, it like has to be, it kind of like they diffused it rather than escalated it. And if they wanted to do that, maybe they needed to just give it some time difference. And maybe that would have worked better. But doing it right there in the moment, it does feel like the balloon just deflated. So,
right.
Or,
right.
You know, your other analogies, those are all fine. But yeah, that helps a ton in kind of putting, I think you're really onto something there, Ryan.
Yeah. Getting into the actual details of it, Cheers, the season openers are always really good at how they recap like cliffhangers or previous episodes whenever they have to do a continuation. So for this one, no exception, they start off not at Cheers, but in Gary's Old Town Tavern. It's a familiar set, but maybe the first time we've gotten an establishing shot of the outside, I think.
I don't remember seeing one before.
Yeah, I think so. Anyway, we start. A bartender is telling the customers that what has been going on in Cheers as a way to recap last season's finale about Robin going to jail, Robin leaving Rebecca, Sam getting the bar back, Rebecca having to work for Sam, and all this is going on. And then they're like, "How do you know all this stuff?" And he's like, "Oh, the bartender's like, I have my sources." As he's pouring two beers, and he walks over, and the joke reveal is that Norm and Cliff are sitting at Gary's, like when they're not at Cheers, they go over to another bar across town, even though it's their rival. Another round on the house or something. Like this is their arrangement they have, that they give Gary's intel on what's going on at Cheers for free beers. There's a lot about Cheers, about the show, that we have to suspend our disbelief, like how a bar that size functions with the few employees it has, how the employees can just randomly leave and it not affect the bar's production or anything like that.
Yeah.
I gotta say, another head scratcher that strains credulity is the fact that anybody would be this interested in what goes on at another bar across town, that this would be like valuable intel that they're sharing. Like, who cares? Like, I guess, okay, it's a millionaire in town. Like, I guess, like, if Elon Musk or Jeff Bezos or somebody was dating like a local cocktail waitress, you would kind of be interested in what's going on at that particular Applebee's. You know, that'd be interesting. Mm-hmm. But yes. Like, really? Like, I guess, you know, they didn't have all the social media feeds that time, so they had to get their information elsewhere.
That is a very good take. And I was thinking the same sorts of things. Apparently, it must be very valuable because, boy, that customer was so interested.
Yeah, that was the other thing.
He was like, really?
Hanging on every word.
It was fun. And I almost was afraid that we were supposed to think that the bartender was Gary, but a new actor playing Gary.
It would have been the third.
Nothing like the other two Garys. Thank goodness that the credits on IMDb say he's just bartender.
Yeah, I know.
That bothered me for a minute.
I always wondered or thought or suspected maybe that was supposed to be Gary, which would have been the third actor to play the part, and they just opted not to name him. However, Gary does appear in the very next episode this season, played by Joel Polis, one of the previous actors to play the part. So we do get that connection. Yeah, that was my first thought. I was like, is this the third Gary we've had? Like, but knowing that they got him back for episode two, that I think it would have been cool if they had gotten him for this episode, and that we would have had that continuity.
Right. Yeah. And that would have been all nice to see a Gary actor who has that smarminess kind of delivering it. It almost works a little bit better. It works a little, I almost think the lines would work a little bit better from one of them. Yeah. The guy did it. The actor doing the bartender, he did a fine job. It just, I think it kind of just need that little extra, almost sinister take to it, just a little bit.
Yeah, and actually, the bartender, he's the actor who plays him is Edmund Gaines. He has a handful of credits, but this is notably the last one on IMDb.
Oh,
but he was still active because he was actually a casting director, and not necessarily an actor by vocation. He just kind of Maybe just appeared when they needed him. But yeah, he was a casting director, so I'm sure the production staff knew him, and they were like, hey, do you want to do this one little bit? You just have a couple of lines in the teaser? And yeah, it kind of worked out that way. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the other thing for suspending disbelief that we have to work on is, how the heck does Norm have time to visit any other bars besides Cheers? I mean, we've seen that he's recognized at the bowling alley's bar, so we know that.
Yeah.
And according to Cliff, he has a life.
He has a life.
How?
Well, he never goes home. He's literally never at home with her.
But it's like, he needs to explain himself to Sam, though. It's like, where are you at? Where have you been, Norm? You have a key to the bar. Come on, where have you been?
As for the other guest cast in this one, the customer who was just like eyes like taped open with attention for this story. That customer is played by Christopher Abraham. He appeared in this. He appeared in an episode of Coach. And then two movies called Mischievous and Confessions of a Lap Dancer, and was a production coordinator on Insatiable Wives and Erotic Boundaries. So, you know, he wasn't a sitcom regular, I guess.
He also might be a stage actor, so, you know.
Could have been.
A lot of crossover between lap dancing and not, I wouldn't know.
Right. And if he was a PC on Insatiable Wives and Erotic Boundaries, then, you know, maybe that's why his character was so interested in the sex life of Robin Colcord and Rebecca Howe.
Oh, so we're getting to the meta commentary now. Okay.
Yeah. Very good. Yeah. Speaking of Robin and Rebecca, yeah, once we get after the opening credits, we kind of come back to where we left off. We were talking about Robin returns. Now we're inside the office and we see what he sees. The office is just wrecked. Rebecca is just starting to get dressed. When she sees him, she runs to Robin to profess that she really does love him. And Sam, he's like, my button is caught in your zipper. He's like holding her up. But she denies sleeping with Sam, and she's like, nothing happened. And Robin's like, nothing. And she's like, yeah, something almost happened, but we stopped. I wouldn't betray you because I love you so much. And Robin kind of looks at Sam, and I'm not sure if that was in the script or if it was just something that actor did, but Robin like looks straight at Sam and he's like, is this on the level? And Sam kind of like, yeah, whatever she said, kind of like, and you can tell that he's hurt, he's not happy about it, but he goes along with it. Anyway, so why is Robin back? He says that he is going to turn himself in. He's made arrangements with his lawyer, and Rebecca says that even if he is broke, she will still be waiting for him when he gets out of jail, and she will help him rebuild his fortune. And Carla, who's come in to get some stuff out of the stockroom, is like, oh, yeah, good idea. Just look what she's done with this bar.
Which Robin follows up with the very pithy line of, oh, shut up.
Yeah, he's like, which, he's been wanting to say that to Carla for a long time.
Exactly. And how many characters have gotten away with doing anything like that to Carla?
Yeah.
She does not put up with it.
True. Yeah.
So I'm trying to think if anybody else really got away with it. Not really, but technically she does get her revenge in a few minutes.
Yeah, good point. Anyway, Robin leaves, Carla goes out, and Rebecca's with Sam, and she thanks him for lying about what they did, which confirms for the audience that they did have sex, possibly in several places around the office, from the state of the couch and the desk and the stock room behind them.
Yeah, they were not neat. They were not being neat.
So then she follows Robin out to the bar, and he gets off the phone. He's turning himself in right away to avoid the media circus. And mentioned that the paparazzi will pay anything to get a picture of fugitive Robin Colcord. And he opens the door to walk out, and flash, Carla is there with a Polaroid camera, takes a shot, and she's like, all right, that was good. Let's try another one, only this time look a little more guilty.
Now, what was all interesting on that scene at the end and the blocking out, it was almost like instead of him storming past Carla, he kind of pushed her in front of him. I wasn't quite sure about what that was about. It seemed a little strange in the blocking there.
He had to get out of her, but like he couldn't necessarily manhandle her. So he kind of does this like shimmy and kind of touch her. But yeah, it was a little bit awkward.
I will say that also the moment with Sam and Rebecca, when they're kind of like sheepishly, you know, talking about the lie and also what had happened, I actually kind of like that. I did like the gentleness between them in it, and that felt really kind of warm. So
yeah,
it was a nice moment.
I agree. And they have some moments like that later on this episode that are really good. Mm-hmm. The other thing that kind of just feels a little bit, as I was saying, kind of low energy and a little bit disappointing about this intro is the fact that, "Oh, shut up," is Robin's best line in this episode, this scene. I was like, he's not witty. He's not haughty. He's not like pompous or arrogant. Of course, obviously, given his circumstances, he doesn't really have that. He shouldn't have that sense of superiority, but I don't know. I miss smug Robin, which we don't get in this at all. So
right, yeah, that's very fair. And I felt the same way. There was a bit of a disconnect in that.
Yeah. The next day, we're back to the bar is in full swing, and Sam is finishing his redecorating of the bar, and he is straightening a sign on the wall that says, "This is a square house. Please report any unfairness to the management." I am happy to say that I have that sign on my wall outside this room.
Really?
Yep.
Oh.
Yep. My brother Neil got that as a Christmas present for me a long time ago. So, yeah, I love
that's
that
wonderful.
Sign.
Yep. That's wonderful. Because that sign is like burned into my brain when I look at the walls on Cheers.
It's like, and it's also like nothing. It doesn't say Cheers. There's no reference to anything. Like, you look at that, if you don't know, it's not something they call attention to except in this very moment. So it's like, if you're just a casual fan, you might not even recognize that sign. So I love it. Like, people are like, "What is this sign about?" And I'm like, "Ah, let me tell you." Not that a lot of people come into my home, so I don't get a lot of people asking. But in my fantasies, if they did.
Well, you can tell that since I was surprised to hear that you had it. I haven't been to your home. I think my invite must have gotten lost in the mail.
Just like the other contestants on Clivy's Jeopardy answer, "You have never been in my kitchen."
Very fair.
So Sam asked the guys what they think, and they're like, "By what?" He's like, "Well, all my stuff is back." And they don't notice. They haven't noticed any of the changes he's made to make the bar. Like, he's reset the bar setting back to like season 5. And they don't care. And Norm is like, "We noticed the important stuff, okay?" And he's like drinking his beer and looking at the newspaper. He's like, "By the way, is Diane coming in today?" Sam and Fraser have a physical startle reaction. Like,
yes!
A jump, this momentary panic.
Oh, this moment, you could see it coming. Mm-hmm. You knew it was going to be a Diane joke. You knew it. And it still just makes you laugh.
Yeah.
Because boy, Sam and Fraser are like terrified that she is supposed to be coming in. any second. So it's fantastic. What I also like about this whole thing, it starts with like the first scene. I think the banner is down by now, but the episode starts that big banner on the side that says "Under old management."
Yeah, yeah.
Which is a fun gag. That's a really fun gag. And kind of leads into this moment here too. But it's also something I was thinking way too much about, in that Diane's presence is still kind of in the show, because the title sequence, when the theme song plays, still has that one piece of artwork when they do the starring caption that features Shelley Long's drawn image.
Yeah, yeah, the title of her, yeah.
Yeah, so even though the actress no longer appearing in the episode, it's kind of like when they left the image for Nicholas Colasanto in for like an extra season,
right,
as a very brief clip. So he was still kind of around, but they since cut that out. Right. But that clip for the starring is still there, because I think it would be weird to get that out of the intro of the show.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a little synonymous with that. Yeah.
Yeah. It just wouldn't feel right. Right. Right after you see Cheers to come to that image.
Right.
But it does kind of lend to the fact that, no, the character is still around. And yes, we are still going to keep getting references.
We're still going to make jokes.
She's still going to name dropped and joked about.
Yeah. And yeah, Fraser, like, "I seen a ghost" or something. Like this jump scare and everything. And Norman Woody just high five at the joke and everything. The way that they can still do this just to like razz the guys.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And then Cliff, he's like, hey, I just remembered. I never called Ma to tell her about Sam getting the bar back. So he gets the phone and he's like, hey, Ma, it's Cliffy. Guess who owns Cheers now? Well, no, it's not me. Ma, it's Sam. And then he just hit this, his enthusiasm just gets lower and lower, just draining out of it as he keeps it. He's like, I'm still a mailman, Mom. Well, I know you had high hopes for me, but I couldn't finish college, and that's all there is to it. And he's like, hangs up the phone angry. Like, she was thrilled at the news, Sam.
Oh, poor Cliff. Not surprising how this particular exchange went.
Sam is going through the books and he finds out that Woody and Carla haven't had a raise in 2 years. Woody's like, that must be why I've been so bitter all these years. Sam says that he is going to wipe out everyone's bar tab as a celebration. They're all, you know, cheering in support of that. No one more so than Norm. And I'm pretty sure everybody looks at Norm because they're like, this is his birthday present.
Right.
And he's like, I'm not one for mushy sentiments, Sam, but if you ever need a liver donor, I've got one, like, yay big. And he like holds his hands out like he's holding a watermelon or something.
Two good zingers from Norm already. Mm-hmm. My goodness. Yeah, that's just so great. So great. What was I thinking about on that front, though? Cast my mind back to an earlier season's gag where Sam was saying that, well, no, Norm, your bar tab, I'm using that for my retirement fund. And Norm's yeah, keep dreaming, Sam. So I was like, oh, so I guess Sam's like, yeah, that's never going to happen.
Yeah, I'm never going to be able to cash that one in.
That's a check you cannot cash.
Yeah. Rebecca comes back. She is looking for another job. She tells Sam as he is just taking out some of the plants from her office. He's like, he says he's going to take them out to the woods to give them their freedom. And then he just slams them, the pop trees, in the trash can out in the alley.
But that's also that's partly because she came in and called it a temporary dead end stupid job.
Right.
So she did kind of ask for it.
Right. Yeah. You tell the tension between them that she's not happy and he's still hurt, but they're not going to talk about it. Then Carla comes in late because she says, of all the days for my kids to handcuff me to the water heater. And when she comes in, she assumes that by now Sam has told everyone that he slept with Rebecca, but he didn't mention a word of it. And Carla's like, well, maybe he's saving all the dirty details for me. You know, he's such a gentleman. And here we deviate from the main plot because we've got Cliff Clavin's mid-morning brain twister. And man, so
with a setup like that, it's like, what are we getting into?
Frasier hopes it's as stimulating as yesterday's question. If the Lennon sisters, the Maguire sisters, and the Andrews sisters came to a four-way stop, which would have the right of way? Just the three vocal trios from decades past that would have this traffic encounter.
Goodness.
So what is Cliff's question for this one?
Oh, he asks, how would the Civil War have changed if Lincoln had had octopus tentacles instead of a beard?
And Frasier instantly objects that there's no way that you can possibly answer this question with any rightful or intelligent answer. But they're like, not so fast.
Yeah.
Norm points out that the Gettysburg Address, we can assume, would have been written on the back of 8 envelopes instead of one. What else they say? He could have disarmed John Wilkes Booth and still applauded the play.
Yes.
What was the other one they asked?
Oh, my goodness.
What if Herbert Hoover was able to expand his face like a blowfish?
You know the writers are having so much fun with this. They are brainstorming like crazy, and this is probably only 1% of the ideas they probably threw around.
Right. It's a good thing to give Cliff something to do. It doesn't make him look like pathetic or like so much of a doofus, but it's like you get a little bit of insight into his crazy without it being over the top. And you get some gags out of this one. So
now let's also dissect the fact that it's called the mid-morning brain twister. Morning. Oh, yeah. This is the guys are spending their day there. Okay. Frasier,
yeah,
a child at home, is spending his morning at the bar.
I'm sure Cliff did
no
an
alcoholism
hour of his
in
room.
This house at all.
Yeah. Frasier might have had a patient or two and then stepped out. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Anyway, Rebecca assumes
that's what you want to do when you're being a psychiatrist is just step out for a quick nip and then come back to work.
maybe some of those patients really are harder than others. But
well, we've seen ample evidence of that.
Yeah. Rebecca assumes that they're gossiping about her. Frasier says they're talking about former presidents with fish parts in their faces. And she's like, do you expect me to believe you were talking about something that stupid? And Carl's like, where have you been all these years?
Then, right on the point. Right on point all the way.
And Rebecca all but confirms Carla's theory that Sam and Rebecca slept together. And the guys start high-fiving. And then Sam comes in and they're like, yeah. He's like, yeah. They're like, did you finally, what is Carla say? You finally slept with like the howitzer or something like that. And they're all, you know, cheering, mm-hmm. catcalling. He's like, guys, that's tacky. Like, we know that. It says that above the door. So. But he denies it, which surprises Rebecca as well as the others. And they don't believe that he would ever deny something like that. You know, he lives to brag about that stuff. And as they point out, they live to hear about it. It's a symbiotic relationship, really. Not unlike the pilot fish that swims around eating bits of meat from the shark's mouth.
And just the perfect moment to come to dovetail back into that bit.
Yeah, because if George Washington had had a pilot fish, he wouldn't have needed wooden dentures. Yeah. Now you're getting it.
Well, but then also Frasier then steps into it because he goes too far. It's, you know, then he could have swum across the Delaware to defeat the Hessians. It's like, and then they all start making fun of him.
Right. It's only the president's face that changes. Like, duh, Dr. Crane. Yeah.
Oh yeah, because they're so intellectual about this thing.
Right, exactly. And you just see him like looking back, why am I here? Why do I bring this upon myself?
Yes, you could be at work, Frasier. It's mid-morning. Or you could be playing with, I don't know, your son. It's mid-morning.
Back in Sam's office, Sam is kind of like finishing redecorating. And there's a callback to something that I pointed out last season in the episode, The Ghost and Mrs. LeBeck. We see on the wall behind Sam's bed, he had the fish with the baseball helmet on it. That used to be in his office, and they got rid of it when they redressed the set for season 6. And on that episode, I remarked that it was kind of crazy that the production kept that prop for all those years, unless it was a replica, and it very well could have been a replica. Mm-hmm. But now it makes sense, because at that point when they made that episode, they would have known that Sam was going to get the bar back at this point and kind of return his old stuff to bring the set back to what it was looking like a few years ago. So I just think that was a nice little bit of continuity that they kept throughout the different eras.
Right. Oh, absolutely. I will say, I don't know the slightest bit about how props work in the television world. However, from my very short stint of community theater, we hold on to everything.
You save everything. Yeah.
Everything. You never throw anything out. Even though it's like, I've used this once. Are we ever going to need it again? I have no plans for ever needing it again, but you dare not get rid of it because you just don't know.
Yeah. So the show would have had its own dedicated warehouse for stuff like this, just in case. Like,
But I have to think that they also would have had kind of a long game idea of, oh, we'll probably have Sam back in charge of the bar if we go long enough. Unless we get canceled before we get to that point, we'll probably get Sam back in the bar as running the bar. So, hold on to this is a square house sign. Don't throw it out. So, I can see it. But I also was loving seeing the fish cup there because I really was also remembering you pointing it out, and that merely tickled me. It's like, yeah, Ryan said that.
I knew that was a big deal.
Yeah, that's awesome.
In the office together, Rebecca thanks him for not gossiping about their affair. And Sam is like, it was nothing. She's like, no big deal. And she's like, wait, the covering it up or the sex part was no big deal? And Rebecca tells him that it was one of the most powerful experiences she's ever had. And he kind of mocks her for it. He's like, you need to get out more, girl. And she's like, well, it wasn't special for you. And he's like, hey, and he kind of goes around basically saying that he built it up too much and it was a bit of a letdown. And he compares sex with Rebecca to being disappointed by the Bad News Bears, which of all the titles to use for that could have gotten better. And she's like, so it wasn't that great? And Sam's like, no, it was just Tatum O'Neal throwing the ball around. And she's like, no. He's like, yeah, you know, the sex was fine. She's like, but it was a letdown like the Bad News Bears. He's like, no, it was much better than the Bad News Bears.
Well, also, there's no pulling back when you say it was fine. Oh, she locked in to fine.
Yeah.
It's like, that's the participation award.
Nobody wants to hear that about their performance.
No.
And then she, like, I think to kind of save her own dignity, she has to basically throw it back out and go on the offensive. And she accuses him of trying to trick her into going to bed with him again. And no matter what he says to convince her otherwise, that's her defense. And she storms out to, you know, try and salvage herself. But,
which actually is a believable tactic.
Yeah, of course.
Sam has done that.
Right. It's not inconceivable, but you can try it. Yeah.
Yeah. He's tried to make her think that she's not good in the past. It's like, or used her own insecurity about it before she slept with Robin for that first time to say like, hey, if you want some pointers and make sure you're up to snuff, I could help you out. So he's done it before.
Right. He has used the technique of like, use me as a way of getting better, of improving yourself. So, no, you're right. That's absolutely a tactic that he is not above using.
Yeah. So but it is funny to see it turned back around against him. That's kind of, even though he's not trying to do anything.
Right. Right. And he runs out of the office to try and stop her. And he kind of grabs him. She accuses him of groping her. And she actually says sexual harassment, which was like, you finally mentioned this thing that is just so prevalent in this entire show. But
They actually did use the words.
Yeah.
Man.
So she says she's quitting. She's never coming back. And Woody's like, me too. And whatever, the $20 raise was so too little too late. And Sam is like, look, her leaving has nothing to do with you. And he's like, but still, you know, $20. And Sam ups his raise to $25. And he's like, now, please kind of get back to work. And kind of Sam just kind of puts his arm on his shoulder to kind of guide him in. And Woody just hands up. He's like, hey, keep your hands off me. Like, this is still a hostile work environment.
Oh, heavens. Well, I did look it up just because I had to. How much the $20 would have been today? It's like $50. And $25 is like $60. So the $20 a week actually sounds like pretty pocket change, but when you get to $50 or $60, like in the salary range that they're probably working in, it's like, okay, that's not too bad.
Yeah.
That's okay. It's not huge, but it's like, it's okay.
Yeah, that adds up a little bit.
Yeah.
So now at this point, they're quick to point out that if Rebecca is gone forever, that means that Sam never slept with her. He struck out for good. And this is a dark day for the bar. They're all hanging their heads in defeat. And Sam tries to let that go. But he slips because he really wants to tell them. He's like, come on in. He's like, last night, Rebecca and I, he wants to invite them into the office to show them exactly where. And he's like, we talked about putting up some shelves. and she thought it was a bad idea, but I'm going to do it anyway, you know? They're just like, this is a sad day. So,
very sad day. I will also say that I'm sure there was at least one woman that Sam has hit on in the bar who turned him down. So saying that Sam has never struck out before doesn't quite work, except in the revisionist thinking of not just Sam, but also all of his friends, including Carla, is that as long as he can slip in, oh, I wasn't interested in her anyway, that saves it.
Yeah.
So like when he got shot down by one woman very aggressively in an early season, he would have covered it right there. And so, she doesn't count.
Right.
So, but it's all that, it's very much slanted sort of an extremely biased perspective. So they, but they've done it before. So it's like, I know it's not an honest evaluation of, of this. I know it's not.
To use our term, they can come up with a no prize for those, for explaining why those, you didn't go out, you didn't sleep with everybody. But this was a 3-year long attempt in courtship and everything that looks like it finally failed. There's no way of talking around this one.
Mm-hmm. And the fact that he didn't have a chance to slip that in before she left. If he had said, well, I wasn't really, it's not that big a deal, guys. If he had slipped that in at any point, they would have allowed it. It would have been allowed by the judges, even the Ukrainian one.
Next, we see that Sam goes to see his priest, which is a familiar character. It's Father Barry, played by Eric Christmas. This is his third of four appearances on Cheers. And it's a good one because Sam, he doesn't know why he's mad at Rebecca, but he also feels loyal to her and he can't brag about what they did. And he's kind of going through this whole thing. He's like, am I a complicated guy dealing with a simple problem or a simple guy dealing with a complicated problem? And he just lays this all out on his priest. He's like, what should I do? And you just see the priest take a moment and then just ask, am I to understand you had relations with a woman who is not your wife? Yes. It's like, thank you for catching up to what we've all known for the last 9 seasons or 8 seasons.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and Father Barry is just a treat. I love seeing Father Barry on. They use him so well. They don't overdo his appearances, but boy, they could have done a few more. A few more would have been just wonderful because he just knocks it out of the park with his delivery and just the fact that he's Sam's priest.
Yeah.
That's what he's become. He's become Sam's priest. Right. But I guess he doesn't see him that often or really go to confessional because with Father Barry's question. But scene is short and golden.
Yeah. There was an opportunity they could have used him at the end of season 10, a wedding episode. But because there is a priest or minister figure in that episode, although he's a very different type of character, so they would have had to change some things. But Father Barry basically tells him to do, you know, however many Hail Mary, like 3 Hail Marys for our fathers and what, like 9 rosaries or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like 9 rosaries. That's a lot. And that even continues back at Cheers when he's talking to Sam about it. He's like, I have to like hold these beads all this time. And she's like, hey, it's not a religion for wusses.
Well, at that point I have to give a shout out to Jonathan Schaefer Hames of the Married with Content podcast, because I know that he is a practicing Catholic and it's not for wusses.
I think that's one of the reasons why I'm not a practicing Catholic anymore.
My goodness.
I looked at all those things. I looked at all those rosaries and prayers. I was like, you don't want to do this. But the gang, they kind of mentioned that, you know, they feel they live vicariously through his successes, but that means they also feel vicarious pain when he strikes out. And they want to know if he's going to snap out of this funk or do they have to rent a Matt Helm movie?
Which is a reference I had to look up.
not quite James Bond, but that type of thing, like a recurring action hero type thing. He had a handful of movies and then like a TV series.
Right. Yeah. Well, it's like all the cover art has, you know, women in provocative clothing.
Yeah, yeah.
And the spy stuff going around, like bombs and guns and everything like that. I can see why this was something that the writers especially might have been more familiar with than myself at the age I was when this episode came out.
Right. Yeah. Sam, again, he's cracking. He really wants to tell them. He's like, you know, last night he and Rebecca were in that office and they had this disagreement about those shelves, and he gets a story. He retreats to the office to kind of get away from it. And then we get this little transition where we get an outside shot that makes it look like it's daytime, but it's obviously night when Rebecca comes in. Because she goes into the office to complain about her paycheck only being $16. And if you go back and look at what she was doing in the end of season 8, it was pretty much just throwing drinks in guys' faces. That kind of explains why Sam is like, you know, stupid computers, that should have been only $6. He's like, you got a bet on you? And she's like, I don't care about the check, but give me the check. And she apologizes for storming off and accusing him of lying to get her into bed. She kind of had the, you know, long dark night of the soul, had to kind of think about it and realize that that's not what he was doing. He was being sincere and she was just trying to defend herself. But if she's being honest, she knows that she is a lousy lover. And Sam's like, no, don't do that. And she's like, it's all right. It's not like I haven't heard it before.
No.
And she's like, I have to accept some people are bad at math. Some people can't skip. And she's like, yeah, I'm a lousy lover. But Robin didn't realize it because he's English. It's like, ooh. Tough shot.
Oh, so, but yeah, just digging that hole. It's like bad at math. Some people can't skip. It's like, where are we going with this?
It's just like a little quirk, a little trait. But,
Well, and also, Kirstie Alley was really bringing that little crack she brings to her voice, especially when she's kind of upset or pleading.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's her all business voice that's a very strong alto, but then she'll have this little crack that slips in once in a while. It was getting me every time I heard it. It was not a distracting thing. It was reassuring and make me laugh.
Yeah, it's like this does kind of show a new phase of their relationship where she's being vulnerable and being honest with.
Mm-hmm.
A guy who she has now been as intimate as she could be with, and she doesn't have to be defensive. She doesn't have to put up her guard, and she can.
Right.
There's a vulnerability, but it's also kind of just hidden in this, like, I'm admitting this to myself by telling you, and you know, it's it's a show of trust and show of faith in Sam that he means that much to her too.
Right,
And then I think that's why, how he is able to tell her that his feelings were hurt, because she, after they slept together, she immediately left him for Robin. And maybe he was hoping that it would mean more than that. But that doesn't explain why he didn't tell the guys, why he didn't brag about it. And he says that he thought it would be a betrayal of their friendship, which is kind of the point where they had gotten at this. And he says, I don't know how to act because I've never had a friend before. And she's like, oh, Sam, you have lots of friends. He goes, no, I never had a friend.
That little emphasis made all the difference.
It's such a good line. Yeah.
Yeah.
So this whole thing was that his struggle was because he was being noble, and because this is something that he kind of, at the beginning of season 8, 1 year ago, he was trying to approach Rebecca and tell her that he cares for her. He really loves her, that he's not just trying to get her into bed, but that she means more to him than that. And I think we've seen this evolution now where we're at the point where you can take the sex part off the table because they did it. And it didn't move the world for Sam. It might have for her, but
right.
But so now he's just like, yeah, it's the trick at the end of every quest. You find out that the treasure wasn't what you were seeking all along. It was this other thing. So what he has found with Rebecca, this kind of love and tenderness, is not about sex or the physicality of it. It's that he found a friend, somebody that he trusts and has this bond with that he wasn't expecting. It actually means more to him.
Which is actually something he didn't even have with Diane.
Yeah, very true, actually. Yeah, because there was always something else going on between them. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they had unmistakable chemistry and passion, but they really couldn't be friends. They just couldn't.
No. They tried, and they were kidding themselves. But yeah, it was always, they were either loving each other or hating each other. There really wasn't a middle ground.
So was it the end of season 6, which had the finale of Sam in the phone booth calling her?
Yes.
To help her get through a rough night.
Yes, from downstairs by her apartment. Yeah.
Yeah. So even there, it's like he has acted in support of them being friends over sex all the way since then.
Yeah. So, and it's been a recurring thing. And I think I made the case that by the end of that season, they had kind of gotten to that point where he he cared about her that way. He wanted to be the friend that she needed in that moment more than, you know, he wanted her physically or sexually. And then they just kind of, they had to revert from time to time in the stories in season 7 and 8 to kind of like act like he wanted to get her back into bed just because that was part of the show's, you know, impetus.
Absolutely. And also it's like a thing of Sam actually putting someone else's needs before his own.
Right.
That's also a huge thing for him. Right. So,
and because ultimately he was being noble and because he showed this, that he loves her in this way, she wants to reward him. And so she will let him, you know, like tell everybody, tell the whole bar, everybody like that. And he's like, yeah, he's like, I'll prove that you were fantastic. Cause she's like, the sex was good. He's like, yeah, I'll prove the sex was fantastic. I'll tell everybody about it. And so you don't have to do that. He's like, no, I think I do, you know, at least let me tell Carla, you know, it's a guy thing.
So I like her bit where she says, no, it's just enough knowing you're willing to do that. Yeah. And Sam says, no, I think you need more.
You need more proof of that.
It's like, okay, yeah, the Sam's at war with himself about this, but it's okay. It's okay. He's only human.
Yeah. So they go out together. They go out into the bar to tell the group. They gather all the players, and he tells Norm, Cliff, Carla, and Woody. He says, last night they made love in the office and she was fabulous. And there's just this silent resignation from the group and just this exhalation. I was like, oh, this is pretty pathetic. And they don't even want to look at him. They're just turning their backs. And he's like, what is it? He's like, they don't believe Sam. He's like, why would he wait the whole day to tell them for one thing? And for the other thing, Rebecca was fabulous. He's like, that's the hardest part to believe. And you see Norm get up, he grabs Sam. He's like, come on, let's go take a look at those shelves, Sammy. And he's like, no, I didn't tell you because I was being noble. And Rebecca's like, no, I was fabulous. And that's where we cut away. So,
that was an appropriate ending for the episode. Yeah. It also felt a little meta appropriate in that how we felt the start of the episode was like,
exactly. Yeah. That's kind of like the whole thing. It's like, by the end of it, they get to this big thing. Like, this is what they've been building to, and they reveal it now. Like, this is the post climax and the acknowledgement of it is kind of like, all right, whatever. So,
yeah. Yeah. Now I will also say that from their perspective, Carla and the gang, yes, as far as they know, Sam has never lied about going to bed with somebody before, but I'm pretty sure that we've had, as the audience, we've seen him lie about this before. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I'm sure.
That it's like, no, there's been once or twice where it's like, he saved face by claiming it. And it's like, they all believed him. So, but this situation, they don't believe. Well, because they know Rebecca too well.
Right. Overall, I think it's not the strongest episode in the season. It's not one of the stronger episodes of the series, obviously. They start off in kind of a hole that they dug, and maybe it was just because of the cliffhanger they set themselves up with at the end of last season, which was so high that, like, yeah, they would have had to do a lot of different things to kind of get around it. But again, yeah, I also think, what might have happened, like when they're writing this episode in their mind, they're thinking that Rebecca is going to be pregnant at some point, like with either Robin or Sam's baby. So that's going to be a thing. So interesting. Yeah.
Which does then gives it like a whole different dimension to look at this episode. Just even knowing that was on the table.
Right.
That does kind of perhaps elevate a little bit of what they were trying to do. Mm-hmm. But it's too bad that it's like, I think they still could have made some other choices that would have made it land a little bit better and still would have preserved that storyline. But yeah, and I do like the contrast of Rebecca saying, but I was fabulous. And everybody going like, yeah, whatever.
Oh, anyway, thank you, Tim, for being on this episode. This was a fun discussion. Getting into our superlative categories, for Norm's tab, he had 5 beers this episode, which brings him up to 831 now.
No wonder his liver is yay big.
Yeah. For the employee of the week, I'm sure I had George Wendt on the mind because of, you know, what was going on with his passing and everything. But I do legitimately think he was my MVP this episode. He just had a few, like, just really fun lines that I liked.
That's great. That's great. I will say that I kind of let this slip in a little bit earlier. Eric Christmas as Father Barry just really won me over as
always. He was my runner-up.
Yeah. Yeah, he was just, because he was so good. You know, that his delivery of, am I to understand that you had relations with a woman who is not your wife? And then also, like, after being asked about that, nine rosaries, that's a lot. We're cracking down. He's so good.
It is.
Oh, he's so wonderful in this part. Nice. Well, we needed a different sitcom where he could be a more regular presence. I think that would have, that's what we needed.
Yeah.
Something where Father Barry could be more involved. But he just wonderful. But yes, and plenty of, we've already talked about the zingers from Norm, but he was on par today too.
Mm-hmm. What was your home run? Was it that part from Father Barry?
I was actually going to give the home run to Rebecca.
Okay.
It's in that final scene talking about how she is as a lousy lover and saying, I am a dud, I know it. Robin just doesn't realize it because he's English. It's like, that's so funny. And she does it so well. What did you have for home run?
My runner up was Sam saying, I never had a friend before. Like that. But the big one, this is almost too easy, but it's when Norm says, is Diane coming in today? And they freak out. It's just like, that is their secret weapon. They're like, yes, joke grenade. Like, anytime there's something going on, they just drop a reference to Diane or an insult at her at her expense. And it's just like throwing a bomb in there. It just goes off.
And it's great that they also kind of went out of their way to make sure it also was a Frasier and Sam moment, not just Sam.
Right.
Because that's something the two of them share.
Yeah.
And it would be a shame to miss Kelsey Grammer's reactions in those moments because he is hilarious.
Yeah, very much. Yeah.
Now, I will have to say also the big runner up is, okay, yeah, Norm's line about liver donor. I got one. Yay big. perfect line. Perfect line.
All right. Well, Tim, thank you very much for being on the first episode of season 9 of Cheers Cast. Where else can the listeners hear you if they want to hear more from you?
Well, people can find me at the Right On Network. That's spelled WRIGHT. I spell it because one of my kids asked how to spell it. And like, that word has several different spellings because phonetically. But the Right On Network, where I have my show, The Outcasters. We're covering Batman and the Outsiders, the comic books from the 80s, as well as appearing with AJ Wright, the founder and architect of the Right On Network, on his show, the Batgirl Cassandra Cain podcast. And you can find me around on various other things on the internet. I recently, as in 2 months ago, at the time of this recording, was on JLU Cast with Chris and Cindy Franklin talking about the penultimate episode of Justice League Unlimited. That was so much fun. And yeah, so I keep on bopping around the Fire and Water podcast network. I love you guys. Yeah, I'm glad to be a friend here. So yeah, thank you for having me back.
Well, I'm glad that you mentioned the end of Chris and Cindy Franklin's JLU Cast, because taking that off of Chris's slate frees me up to do more Nightcast episodes with him.
which is also a great thing.
Which is an incidental segue for folks for the listening. My plan going forward for this season, so that these episodes can be constant, but I'm also not burning myself out, is going forward, the plan is to release Cheers Cast 3 times a month. It'll be the first three Thursdays of every month. And the fourth Thursday will be new episodes of Nightcast, which I do with Chris Franklin about Batman comics. And then on months with a fifth Thursday, something else. Maybe The Sandman Slept Here, probably.
Nice.
Or possibly Fire and Water Records. So other things. But yeah, so won't have Cheers Cast every single Thursday, but going forward, the plan is to at least have 3 episodes in a row, 3 Thursdays consecutive, and then skip one and then 3 again. So that should
If I can polish your car just a little bit longer myself too, is that one, I'm so glad to see Nightcast back. It's been a delight to hear you guys and to hear you talk about the world's finest episode issues was way fun. And I had never read Sandman Mystery Theater before your show, but I had it like on the list of maybe I'll get around to it. So it's been just a delight to discover the series for the first time. And you guys, your discussion, wonderful. It's just been the having the three of you and your different perspectives, just been a delight to follow along. So
I appreciate
just
that.
Glad, it's just so glad to have you on all those shows.
Yeah, that is a fun show that I didn't realize I needed to do until we started, because it was so fun talking to Paul and Max with that. That's a constant joy to write and record those episodes. So
excellent.
Anyway, again, Tim, thank you very much for being on this one. I don't know what episode this is for you, if it's like 14 or 18 or somewhere, but I know it won't be your last.
It's not quite that many.
Anyway, thanks to all of you who listen to Cheerscast and support the show by liking and sharing on social media and leaving comments on the website, fireandwaterpodcast.com. You can also support the Fire and Water Podcast Network on Patreon. Cheerscast is supported by the Right On Network, and Jeff Enrick presents Unpacking the Power of Power Pack. Go to patreon.com/FWPodcast to support your favorite show on the Fire and Water Network. Thanks everyone for listening, and until next time, we're closed.
Sam, we have been friends for too long to let it end this way. And I just came back to say that I'm sorry I ran out earlier in a huff, and that I knew you weren't coming on to me. And that when you said I wasn't good, that it wasn't just some trick to get me back into bed. It was because you were being honest, because I am a lousy lover.
No, sweetheart, you're not.
No, Sam, it's all right. It's not like I haven't heard it before. I have to learn to accept it, you know? Some people are bad at math. Some people can't skip.
No. You're a fantastic lover.
I am a dud, and I know it. Robin just didn't realize it because he's English.